It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Okay, it's like total chicken soup outside. I can't drive anywhere.
Don't you love it?
Well,
seriously.
Nah, kind of. Not driving in it. No, looking outside, yeah, feel like we got transported to the Pacific Northwest. It's really cool, but...
For those that don't know, it's very, very foggy here this morning at even 9:30 almost, and it's really foggy out there.
I couldn't even see a streetlight.
But that means it's going to be in the low 70s today, and I kind of like that coming into fall.
I don't even think it's going to make it there.
It may not, but boy, I tell you, I love it. Feels a little too open in here today, doesn't it?
Our guest is no longer here.
It's been a long time since we've been alone in here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we had Murray, then we had Mike, and...
Isn't Jesus with us?
No, it's just...
Jesus is our guest in the studio today.
He didn't take up a lot of room in the studio.
Yeah. I try to hear him, though.
I hope so. That'd be... helpful.
So everyone get your copy of A Man Like No Other.
Just blatant advertising.
Yeah, of course. No,
are they here yet? That's an important question.
They are sitting in customs. I am talking through the whole process of how you get things out of customs.
So they are stateside.
Yes.
Okay.
They're in a container. Now the question is how you get it out of container into storage.
Give me the books, please.
No, it's called Have Forklift.
I packed it all through the Midwest. Everybody who had a look at it was just going, man, I got to get me one of these because it's just...
They do.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
It's a pretty compelling book. I think it'll probably make itself available probably.
And you got another one coming out.
Same time, actually.
Yeah.
It's a rewrite, one I did before.
I know, but it's a great book.
In Season, Embracing the Father's Process of Fruitfulness. It's some of the Vineyard material, and it's extensively rewritten, because this is the book I was telling everybody about when I looked back through me 20 years ago. I was not happy with the fruit of that guy.
I liked the first one. I bet the second one's better, but I liked the first one. I picked it up because I was a Vineyard pastor. I thought you were right
about the Vineyard movement. Actually, this is the fourth version. This is not even
the second.
This
is the fourth version?
Yeah, it was the Vineyard originally. Not too many people saw that. Then it was In My Father's Vineyard, which is a very pretty coffee table book that Word did a while back. And then it was a Tales of the Vine edition in there.
I got one of those.
And now we're down to In Season. And I tell you, the artist we had work on it did a great job. Beautiful book inside and out. It's kind of a piece of art. So,
sweet.
Yeah, it'll be fun to have out and have that discussion again.
I think that's a needed revelation. So I hope you have to print a whole bunch more, because I think to learn to understand how God is working in different ways. I was always preached to as if it was eternal spring is where you're supposed to be.
Or some people preach eternal harvest. You just got to bear fruit all the time. And if you're not bearing fruit, man, something's wrong with you.
And you can't.
And the transition, I love the transition, because I feel like I'm going through that in my life right now, between harvest, which is high octane, lots of stuff going on, things in my life are finding fruitfulness, to heading on into winter when all that goes away. And it just looks like, wow, it don't have all the opportunity, nor do you want it. And you get to come into a different space where God gets to then say, okay, here's where I want you focused. Because I think as fruitfulness grows, so does like a vine. The opportunities are endless. And if you don't prune that dude back, once a year, it's going to stop bearing fruit. It's going to be busy. It's going to have lots of limbs and leaves and all that, but it won't have any grapes. So,
and when you prune it, if you don't know what you're doing, man, do you ever mess up trees.
Are we speaking from experience?
Yes, I've watched people come and prune trees, and you're just going like, "Oh my lands!" You have just kicked it into shock and overdrive,
yeah.
And it's just I don't know. I never understood any of those analogies way back when, but I think I get them better now.
I do know this from my experience. Nothing I learned about pruning a vine helps me prune trees.
I would say that there's truth there. You have to know who you're pruning and what it is how it responds.
Yeah, very different.
And home repairs. You cannot do certain things in winter.
Really?
Did you know that?
Well, I know that about pruning vines. What are we saying about?
No, I'm learning all things about all different seasons, and there's just some darn truth of you cannot do certain things at certain times.
I know my neighbors tried to go through two winters without a roof.
Yeah, that doesn't go over so well.
They lost the couch, a few carpets, and some other things because the rain just comes right through the house. And winters are rainy time here, and so it gets to be a bit of a mess. But I do love what I like about the whole sense of the vineyard and seasons and all that stuff is you really lose your ability to live by principle, and you really have to wake up with a sense of, God, what are you doing in me today? What are you breathing into my life today? And it kind of changes the thing from, because I get those emails where somebody will describe at length, we got one of those this week in the country, describe at length their circumstance, and then ask me, so what do you think I should do?
What are the principles that I should apply?
Well, they don't even ask that. They say, what should I do? But the assumption is there is a set of principles, Wayne, that you know that if you could tell me, I could apply it to the situation.
Oh, super navigator that thou art.
And I just, when I even read through it, I'm going, gosh, there are a million ways God could go with this. You know? He could speak this, speak that. It depends on so many things, who the people are, what's going on in other people's lives, how this impacts other people, that without being nudged to that voice, it's a pretty tough go.
Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of feel like we're taught, you know, all growing up, how to extract these important Bible principles, because I think that's the way people teach the Bible to us.
Yeah.
As opposed to just telling me the story and talking about our life, I'm going to extract the biblical principles for you, but they don't really tell you that you can misapply the principles if you don't hear his voice.
Yeah, because it depends. If you're going to take principles, it depends on what verse you happen to read that day and what principle you pull out. Which,
what
if you read a different verse,
in the original language.
Not helpful. Daniel wrote this on our blog, which is interesting what we're talking about. Noticing a growing awareness that much of my relationship with God has been boiled down to accumulating knowledge about God. This came in handy to impress others now and then, yet does little to relieve the ache and emptiness of disconnection from life itself.
Ooh, well said.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, but I think that's the bummer part of, I think a way in which we have inherited church. Because it really is about acquiring information. You go to meetings to get good information. Surveys would say that people pick churches based upon the value of the teacher up front.
Used to. Now it's the enjoyment of the worship team. That's the bigger factor right now. They sing the music I like. Are they good? Do I enjoy the band? It's not even the teacher guy anymore. That's not funny. That's just
no. I know. But when you look at this, it really depends on your tradition. There's a lot of traditions that don't have a really good band.
Yeah, but they have hymns, and they live by hymns, so they don't need the band. That's a whole other preference. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, but I look at that, and it's like, okay, there's nothing wrong with gaining information about God. That's good, but it's not the same thing as a relationship.
No, I think that's what he's saying. That's all I had.
I know.
So I got this ache inside of, man, I want to know him, but that's not happening. And I think part of the problem, you get back to, you know, why we weren't taught that in buildings. I think once you get above a certain size crowd, really all you can do is give them principles and hope they'll work it out some way. When you're really going to teach somebody how to live inside the voice of God and live inside this affection-based relationship with him, I find that's a different discussion. That doesn't translate well. I mean, you can tell people what to do, but actually help somebody do it?
Yeah, that's personal application.
It really takes sitting down and having the kind of conversation in twos and threes and fours and fives that really helps people get a handle on how to live that kind of life. So I guess the difference in ground school when you're flying, we've talked about that before, versus getting an airplane with an instructor. And here's what we do to learn to fly this. A lot you can learn in ground school, but you can't learn to fly. And flying, to me, would be the goal of going to ground school.
You might be onto something there, Wayne.
Yeah.
There is. Well, I mean, I look at all of the information we gathered, but I don't know that there's an awful lot of, okay, so here's how you guys hang that on your tree, and here's what you're then supposed to go and do. It just seems like, well, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, and particularly, I mean, I remember doing sermons like on anger or giving or community or whatever, and you always got to end with application points. And so you're really hoping between this week and next week, you've done the three things I've asked you to do, which I look back now and go, how did we miss the fact that no one was ever doing the things we were giving them to do? They were just coming back next week, and we give them another list of things to do. And it's easy then to see why people go, there really is a principle I can apply to whatever I'm going through, and I'll be better.
Right.
And it doesn't work.
Well, yeah, I think that's where, you know, in talking with Michael, when he kind of said, you know, gosh, I feel like I've been lied to. I was interesting because I heard that with different ears last time. I just went, well, by who? And the implication would be they had to know different. And that's where I kind of went, I'm not sure they do. So I think I think most guys I know, I don't know any charlatans up there who are intentionally saying, I'm here to deceive. I really know this way, but I'm going to end up preaching that way. There might be one of those. I don't know them.
Well, I'm sure there are some of those, but I don't think there are probably many. But I think the question is, why do you end up believing what you believe? Why did you, when these other inklings came along, ignore them to teach what made you more successful? I think there is something to that, which doesn't mean they're actually lying to people. But I know when I first heard the teaching of the cross in Australia, and I was coming back to the States going, man, why has no one told me this before? And there was an anger about, because I felt lied to. Now, maybe I wasn't. Maybe it wasn't somebody actually had the intent of lying to me for 40 years. Because I like to say they probably didn't know better. But then when you try and explain that to those people, they shut you down so fast. You're going, why is it that you won't look at something a little differently?
Right. No, I get that.
So I think that's what he's probably saying. I felt lied to, but I agree with you. If you really put that on everybody who's not giving you the exact truth and you make them, you know, intentional co-conspirators in your deception.
They're culpable in my wanderings.
Yeah. I don't know how you, then you're going to be a victim for a long time.
Well, I didn't hear that in Michael, but I guess that's what I was sort of responding to, that I'm just going like, gosh, you know, I got enough problems switching my perspective. It's not helpful to then be mad at a whole bunch of people that didn't intentionally lead me astray.
Yeah.
I mean, I might have gotten off in the weeds, but I'm pretty sure I helped myself there. I mean, you know, or at least I just followed the rest of the gang there. And I realize I don't know that the angst that I feel towards others in the body has ever helped me. I mean, I just don't know that it has. I felt it.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally identify with it.
So it needs to help us too? Wow, let me think. I don't know if I've ever been helped by that either. But
I'm just thinking utilitarian a little bit. I realized. I mean, it struck me as it was interesting because I don't know that I had thought about it till it kind of happened last time. Where it's just I realized, gosh, I don't know that anyone's lying. I sort of felt like I wanted to be a little kinder towards the messed up arena that we sometimes come from in terms of religion, because most of the people I know, I think they're sincerely there. That's kind of why they're sincerely stuck. They're going like, well, no, this is what I've been given, and this is the best I know. And then there's a whole sort of invested, you know, my life is invested in this. My sense of well-being is invested in being able to manipulate these principles. And when I do good, I feel good. And then, I mean, it's the whole walk of intimacy, that's a whole different deal. I mean,
we saw
a guy in real tears going like, I am getting like majorly rewired, and this is hard.
And yeah, painful.
Painful
at points, but also gloriously liberating. You know, that gratefully disillusioned. The disillusionment part isn't fun. The grateful part of coming into a fresh sense of living inside who God really is, I mean, that's worth going through that process. But yeah, it touches the deepest places in our heart for sure.
And I think when you can, I don't know, I felt like there was real value in being able to go like, okay, I don't need to be mad at all these people that perhaps didn't give me the best. And I don't even have to waste a bunch of my time being bothered about feeling like I wasted my time. I'm not on a race. I mean, I sort of feel like Jesus doesn't have a stopwatch going like, well, who's going to get to life of freedom? You know?
It is weird that we think that way, though.
I know, we do.
When we do make a change in our life, we feel like, oh, then all that time was wasted. Which then part of the problem is the reason why we stay captive to things that aren't quite true is because we have that, well, I've got too much invested now to go back.
Exactly.
Instead of saying, you know what, I really want to find what's real, so I can let go of what I thought was true for a better journey. And for me, at 42, do I look back at the 42 previous years as a total waste of my life? I don't. I see God's hand in all the things I was involved in, luring me one direction, and I was kind of willfully trying to stay the direction I thought was best, and I thought was him because of what, you know, whatever was going on in me, my desire for significance or approval or whatever. So I can see where I miss some things God's put on my heart. So I get to the end of it going, yeah, I don't feel like I was totally sacked by other people. I do feel like I was involved in that, but there's got to be that willingness at some point where you're saying, this isn't working. I think that was Mike's real turning point. This isn't working for me.
Yeah.
And so people that get to be honest about that, instead of, I mean, I talked to a Mormon bishop one time about what they do with the missionary kids and how ineffective they are in evangelism. Because one of them said something really silly to me, and I've got a friend now, actually a good friend who happens to be a Mormon bishop. So I was telling him, I said, these guys came over and they were saying this. And he looked at me and goes, that's what you get for putting rookies on the front line. I laugh. I'm going, really? You guys see it that way too? He said, well, yeah, we do. And I said, so it isn't really about evangelism then, is it? He goes, what do you mean? I said, this is about putting kids through 2 years of rejection and special ceremonies at the temple so they never doubt this faith again. They never look back at it again because they've got too much invested.
Oh.
And you can see the look in his eye. He didn't deny it. And I don't know how overt that is, but I do think that's one. When you've put somebody through
missile shot over the bow,
humiliation after humiliation, at the same time you reward them with special ceremonies and special underwear that makes them feel really special for going through what they're going through. I'm telling you, it's a pretty heady mix. I think the psychosis of that is you will never question this faith again because now you've got too much embedded. And I wonder if that is it true. I mean, I've met a lot of pastors in this journey who've read So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore or something like that. And I'll sit with them and I'll go, I love what you're saying. In fact, I'm going to talk to a group tonight that's planting a new fellowship here in Newbury Park that wants to talk to me about So You Don't Want Church Anymore. They loved it, but they're planning a conventional thing. And I don't know where that discussion is going to go. I'm really
so you don't intrigued. Want to go to where we're planning.
It'd be fun. We'll go see what that's about tonight. I get some barbecue out of it. And Sarah's making chocolate chip cookies. So,
that's a home so run.
That's worth the night right there. Plus the cookie dough I get later this afternoon, which would be awesome. But I do think the challenge is how much are we willing to risk? And the reason why we end up in these safe little ponds that people have built for us is because, well, everyone else is kind of here, so it feels safe and I feel good. And even pastors will say, I know this probably isn't the best, but I don't know how to make a living doing anything else.
See, that's the biggest bummer, and yet it's also my biggest point of sympathy for folks. They do have too much invested.
Yeah.
And their entire security, their livelihood, I remember sitting on a little dog slope going like, really? 18, half my life was invested in this and it seems like it's the wrong direction. You're just going like, that was a little tough to kind of come to grips going like, really? I could have spent 18 years going in another direction. I would be king of something.
No, not this direction. No, you wouldn't.
But you look at that, you're just going, gosh, you can't spend that much time going in a direction and then end at the bottom of the heap. That was that whole bit of, I feel like I've wasted my time. And I'm just like, I think that whole way of thinking is not helpful. But it is, I don't know why it is the overlay, but it is part of the difficulty of this whole transition. I've invested too much to not keep going down this. And you're just going like, really? Who said it? Where did that formula come from? And why is that even true?
I don't know why it is, but it's everybody's perception for sure.
That's where I end up going like, gosh, who cares whether it takes you 90 years or 9 seconds to get here? Is Jesus there with a stopwatch going, oh, gold medal for you. Oh, well, okay, to the back of the line. No, I don't think it matters to God in terms of that dynamic. He's looking for intimacy and relationship.
Yeah, I don't think that people feel like it matters to God. I think it feels like it matters to me. I wish I'd used those 20 years more productively in terms of living more freely than being on that treadmill. I mean, you get off the treadmill after 20 years, you're going, what? I didn't have to do that. It's that whole dilemma of I've crawled to the top of this ladder and the ladder's on the wrong wall.
See, but I almost think like that mindset, which, look, is massively in me, I think that wars against really being liberated by that sense of grace. Because I still think it's earning it. There's still a sense of reward structure. There's still A sense of the way you're looking at all that, going like, I feel like I wasted my time, or I wish the regrets of, oh, I wish I'd been more. I get all that. I just don't know what it produces for you.
Yeah, I don't know that I have any angst about it now. I'm really trying to just think about that while we're talking. I don't have any. In fact, Mike and I talked about this somewhat more over the weekend. Just what you do have from 20 years of running the treadmill is you recognize the treadmill when it starts slipping back into your life again. And you go, no,
not doing that.
And you can help people who are on that treadmill just kind of, really, how's this working for you? Having a good time? And so I think there's great benefit to the experiences that we had on the other side of grace. As God, and Paul, certainly, I think when he writes back to the Galatians, he writes out of his however many years he had being a Pharisee of Pharisees and saying, really, this guy's wrong ladder, wrong wall, get off that thing. I think he's able to say that because he can sniff out religion, 1,500 miles away.
Wrong ladder, wrong wall. I get that.
Get down that puppy.
No, I think there is. There can be great wisdom on the other side of grace. That's a hilarious way to look at that. But it does. Because I look at some of the ways that I thought, I'm going like, gosh, why did I think that way? Because, man, I did.
Yeah. But not everything I said, talked, and believed during those 20 years was wrong either. It's a mixed bag. There are wonderful things that God showed me that I experienced about him, and then I would apply it all wrong and mess it up. But I look back, and I like that scripture where Jesus talks about the wise guy can bring out from old and new the things that are true. It's not just, well, I'll throw everything out and now it's all good now. I do look back and say, that was a really mixed bag. There was wonderful things in there, and yeah, there was really horrible things I was doing, the whole self-effort and beating other people up to get them to do what I thought would make their lives change. And yeah, I look back at things I regret. I look back at things I love, and now I get to look back 20 years when I wrote In Season and go, oh, gosh, that really was cruddier than I thought it was. So.
You remember the movie The Truman Show?
Yep.
When all of a sudden he realized, wait a minute, he's been living in this whole bubble, like this whole thing. Has any of this been real? And he's like, ticked.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel like.
There's the point. He had been lied to.
he had been lied to. But in that whole sense of, is none of this real? And the reality is like, no, but Truman, you were real. And that's why you were so wonderful to watch. I sort of feel like I've felt like I've had that whispered to me when I look back and go like, yeah, you were on the wrong wall, wrong ladder, looking at things through the wrong lens. But I was sincerely climbing. And I really feel like there's a sense of joy that God had in me, even in going the wrong direction, because I, gosh darn it, I was sincere and I was passionate.
I hear you. Every time I hear that sincere stuff, I think about something I heard. I must have been 12 years old when some lady said this. She said, somebody said, well, they're just being absolutely sincere. And she said, yeah, there'll be a lot of sincere people in hell.
Oh, wow. Crash and burn.
You don't get points for sincerity.
No, but I think you do.
Okay, points. This sounds rocking me like a treadmill. Go ahead. I want to hear
it. All things are pure. I kind of go like, you know what? I think God takes great joy. Even if you're doing wrong, I think he takes great joy in the sincerity of heart that just is doing the best it knows. I don't ding those guys. I just end up going like, they're doing the best they know.
Oh, I hear that. But if the best you know is destructive, and you don't listen when people talk to you otherwise.
Yeah, but just climbing up the wrong wall in the wrong ladder is destructive unless you're throwing other people off.
Oh.
That's a problem. I
hear you. I hear you there. And I think it does help love people who are in it to see them as people, like Jesus talked about the world. I think it was the most healthy thing in the world. Harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And I look at people that stuck in religion the same way because they don't have a real sense of Jesus being my shepherd. They're either trying to shepherd other people or they're trying to be shepherded by somebody. Right. So I can crawl into that analogy and say, yeah, I do see them as harassed and helpless. I do hope the light of God dawns on them. But on the other side of that, when you feel like, someone wrote me today that, or one of the, I guess posted a blog on Livestream, They were talking about they're in some ministry school and they've got just a couple of months before they graduate. And they listened to something I said and it changed their whole lives. And they asked a question in class and now people are running down going, what are you thinking? And who are you? And he goes, and she, I think it's a she was just saying, I don't know what I do between now and 2 months of graduation. Do I just sit here and choke it all down and get the degree done? Do I ask the honest question I want to ask and probably get kicked out and get regarded a heretic by the people around me? Those are the choices people face at tough. And then you do feel like a victim of someone else's whatever.
Yeah.
So you do feel lied to and you do feel beat up. And but I think on the other side, I hope this is true. I hope people get through that, get on the other side of grace and realize, wow, even God is redemptive in those tragedies too, even where I've been hurt and where I've been broken, so that I can come back with a generosity to those. If you don't get generous, and I hear some of the people on this anti-church bandwagon that are just always caustic about pastors and churches and everything's wrong and evil and horrible out there, and I go, gee whiz, that doesn't serve anybody well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole bit of, you know, I marveled at God's ability to go like, man, even going in the wrong direction, you're going to use that too. If we let him, he does. And that, and I just go like, gosh, I don't think there's anything that is a waste in the economy of God. I may not have been going in the most efficient manner. I mean, the securest route to the kingdom. I get that. Yeah. But it was pretty. Yeah. You know, I think I've gotten a little more lighthearted about, I was such I was a treadmill pusher, man. I was like, let's get to the top of this and get there fast. And, you know, like there's a stopwatch. And I'm going like, man, you have rewired all of that pretty profoundly, Lord.
Yeah.
I like that.
And hopefully God's rewiring some of those people I helped wire the wrong way earlier on. That's part of what's helpful to me. The large part of Mike's story, I only get a chance to really process it with him on the podcast, but here was a guy, as we said, starting out that was, you know, really tops in the whole house church facilitation thing here in the U.S., really trying to drive a new movement. And his journey in that whole thing, which people see as the anti-type to religious gatherings, is home stuff. And yet Mike found the same emptiness there that he found in the other deal. It was just a different deal.
It just has different chairs.
Yeah, and since he's gone on this bit of a journey now, he's not inside that anymore. And I think that's pretty telling, because a lot of people who are still looking for a modeled answer, there's got to be something wrong with what we're doing. So if the institutional church is wrong, then the house church must be the right way to doing it. And a lot of people go through that part of the journey and realize this is the same thing. Different clothes, same thing.
Smaller venue.
Smaller venue, but even then, religion in a smaller venue is
still religion.
And again, Mike will say, great people involved in that. Met some great people with some great heart. And all their passion for Jesus has gone to planting house churches. And so the passion for Jesus is, he remembers even being in meetings going, what is Jesus saying? Do we even care? And people are, no, we got to plant house churches. It's going, really? And just his journey has just taken him to a place of now living this more relationally. And I'm nothing, again, I wouldn't beat up on the institutional things on Sunday morning. I wouldn't beat up on house churches. Some I've been to are actually decent. Home-sized gatherings can be wonderful. I'm not saying they can't be. They can also be, if it's just a matter of applying principles, can be incredibly destructive.
You see, I mean, I think even trying to apply principles and evaluating the forms in which we gather, sort of like, well, again, that you're not going to do that just as much as you didn't do that well in your own life. You're not going to do that well in looking at the forms. If that's what God has asked a certain group of people to do, that's probably the best thing for them to do. And I guess I look back and just the individual application of this. I mean, this doesn't make it to a lot of refrigerators, but one of my favorites is, what is that to you? whether it's John looking at Peter or Peter looking at John, you just end up with, I love the little Gospel of John where you see the little petty competitiveness and John's writing of John, you know, Jesus' best friend. And you're just going like, oh, really? nice flesh you poked out there, John. But you just end up going like, gosh, I think all of it is our craving to be known, to be validated, to somehow be affirmed in the what we're doing. And Those are natural. I get that. But they don't need to be comparative.
No, Corinthians warns, when they do get comparative, you become ignorant. When I start comparing my life with yours.
Yeah, I translate to stupid.
Yeah, you just become ignorant. Absolutely. You get no understanding when you're playing this comparative game. Again, because we're back not living by a set of principles and who can work them the best. But what is Jesus asking you to be a part of in the world? What is he asking me to be a part of in the world? And you can't take that from other people. You really can't. You can't measure it by the external things, which I think was one of the things Mike was talking about in terms of the house church deal. This was all measured by dollar per church planted, kind of on a basis to evaluate. Yeah, to evaluate whether the money's being spent. You know, how many churches are we planting versus, and then what really is the church? You guys got a Bible study. Yeah, we'll call that it. And some major churches had fellowship groups. So, yeah, we'll count those as house churches. And it was all about getting funding for the dollar, bang for the buck, I guess. And when you start down that road, I don't think you have a hope of ending up in the right place. Because the stuff Jesus does seems to me to be incredibly inefficient. If you walk into Jericho and thousands of people would like to see who you are, and you go to lunch with one of those, you've not done the most efficient thing you can do in Jericho, at least by external eyes.
Yeah, but picking a whole bunch of unripe fruit is not, like, efficient.
Well, I hear that, too. Yeah. So it's so important. We say this over and over again, and people go, yeah, you guys say the same stuff over again. Of course we do. So if you've heard it all before, stop listening.
Go away.
I had a great friend who was just saying to me, you know, I listened to about 5 minutes of your podcast because I just want to find out what you and Brad are up to these days. And after that, I've heard everything you've had to say. And I said, you know what? I think that's just the greatest compliment we could hear. My hope was in starting this podcast is that you and I would have some conversations that other people could say, oh, this is what two brothers talk like when they're not driving each other with their agenda. They can disagree. They can see things a bit differently. They can come love each other. And then the hope of that is you would end up in some of these conversations in your own life, which would make listening to ours pretty empty.
Yeah.
And that's the hope. And so when I hear people say, I don't really strive to try. Really? I want to know what you're then talking about with other people. What are you discovering? What are you enjoying? And we had about, 20 people over here Saturday night just to have a conversation with Mike and Chris. And I tell you what, people that don't know each other, there's a number of people here that had never been in our home before, had not met some of these other people. And it was just great to watch them hang out and share and how quickly fellowship happens when you don't have to orchestrate it. If you got genuine people who are sorting out a real journey. And, you know, we finally stopped and just said, Mike, because we were on so many good conversations individually, and others were saying, gosh, I'm not getting to talk to Mike. Well, let's all talk together for a bit. So we did that for a while, but it's fun. I love that kind of connection. And then, you know, we don't have a plan to meet this week, so that's even better.
In terms of the inheritance that we've gotten, in terms of what leaders tend to teach, why is it? I mean, I know we've talked about it a little bit, but why is it that we're not giving away how to have a relationship?
That's probably what we're going to talk about tonight, I think, because this is what's kind of been on my heart for this group I'm talking to this evening. But again, it's not efficient. If we came back to that, the conversation I'm going to have with you to help equip you to live inside of an affectionate relationship with Jesus is very different than the conversation I can have in the room of 50 people or 100 people. It's just a different conversation.
See, but okay, I don't disagree, but I end up going like, what else do we have to give them that's going to be effectual and helpful in terms of going down the right road? I end up looking at, you know, the lives of the disciples. It's like they were called to be with Jesus. And then when people recognized who they were, they went, gosh, those guys had been with Jesus. I mean, it was all about the nature of, you could tell that they had been with him. And then in terms of the shift of how we're, quote, giving away this life, you're just going like, what are we giving away? It's like, if you've been with him, I'm going to think that's what you give away. If you've been with the book.
That could be a damning comment.
Well, no.
I hear you, though.
I know, but I think that's where I end up going like, gosh, I don't know, wrong wall, wrong ladder. You're just going like, why is it that we're giving and dispensing principles when, if you've been doing this for any period of time, you kind of recognize, gosh, you could apply those in many different ways, and you wouldn't be able to tell whether it was right or wrong unless you knew the specifics of the life and what God was doing in it. And you can't do that by principle. And so I end up going like, gosh, you cannot enjoy this life without the sense of intimacy of relating to him in an individual directed way. And then we try to mass produce this.
And that's maybe the fatal step. Or do we ever have it to begin with? Because Christianity really has become about ethics, doctrine, and ideals, rituals. So you really, that's what you teach if you're going to be a Christian group. You teach those things. And that's not the same as having a real relationship with Jesus. It's not. And pardon Mike and I were talking about that, working with pastors and things. You're not rewarded for walking with Jesus when you pastor a church. You're rewarded for how entertaining you can be and how you can play the political game. And you're rewarded not for having the closeness of that relationship. But what I said about your statement being a bit damning is, man, I think if you have a real relationship with Jesus, I don't think you want to pass anything else on. I really don't. So if you're passing other stuff on, what is that saying? Are they not having, or is it so small and rudimentary that it's not that real to them? Even when I feel that we've been talking about people writing, give me a principle to fix my situation. Man, I want to tell you, go get in a quiet place and ask Jesus what he wants you to do, because the most, even if I know the principle that might help you, at the end of this, I want you to come out with a relationship with him, not just another guru to call and get some advice.
Yeah, it's the only thing I know that actually works. And I think having at least been on the circuitous route to the kingdom for long enough, I've traipsed around enough of the property to end up going like, you know what? I don't care where you start, but if it doesn't end up in you walking arm in arm with Jesus in a way that you feel carried by his strength, loved by him, led and supported by him, and enjoying him, then I don't really know what the goal is and where we're supposed to get to.
Yeah, even if the first part of that, and I think that's what's scary for people, because the first part of that journey for so many is everything I'm doing isn't working. So I feel lost and I need something else to help it work. And if you love me, you will give me something else to make it work.
If people could see your face.
Yeah.
You did that really well.
Thank you. That's why I felt it.
I went, oh my gosh, I better give him something.
Yeah, that's how it feels. Instead of, you know what? I don't want to give you an excuse to crawl off or to not go to the end of your rope, because that's where you're going to find him in a lovely way. You're going to get desperate. You're going to find that all the voices that have been lying to you quiet down. And then somehow in all that, someone is going to begin to speak to you in a way that you'll know that you're loved and cared for. And it may not turn your situation around right away, but you won't be in it alone anymore. And I don't want to rob that moment from people. I don't. But I know that that comes often at the end of a road where it feels like, man, everything's piling up on me and nothing I've ever done works. I'm going this, nobody does that, and I don't know what to do. And people feel so like they're just in the worst possible place in the world. I'm going, that's probably the best place you can be. And I don't know how to say that to you without it sounding trite and without it hurting you and without all that. But at that end of your rope place is where we finally listen. It's where we finally, unfortunately, have those first inklings of who God is and how he wants to speak to me. And then we'll recognize, oh, he has spoken before. I've just blown past it with my busyness with other things. And so, yeah, it's easier to throw people a lifeline, I guess.
Well,
Seems loving.
Yeah, seems loving.
At the time.
I think it probably is, but the lifeline I'd want to throw them, I think I get drawn towards the words when Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. I don't think that's a principle. I think that he's trying to have a life that is lived out in front of them, and he's trying to say, this is how I live that. And if it would be helpful, follow for a bit. Not do this and there's four principles and I'll see you next week and I'll give you another seven. It's imitate the life that I have. And I think that's where it's like, gosh, I don't know that we're sort of unveiling that. I think when we try to disseminate information, we're not talking about, gee, how does that work in you? We end up trying to distill the thing that, well, here's the principle. Now, you know, get on with it, people. Oh, yeah. And I just end up going like, gosh, I think these things, I mean, John Wimber had a crazy little phrase. He said, you know, these things are more caught than taught. But I think it was really true in terms of going like, whenever it was really taught, what people got was principles.
Yeah, and notes.
Yeah. You know, nice binders.
Yes, lovely binders.
I have so many binders. I do. But when it's taught and it's not really caught and someone hasn't learned it by the relationship, sort of the apprenticeship of living and loving,
mm-hmm.
then I end up going like, well, what'd you get?
Right.
Because when it's lived out, then it becomes really a part of you.
Yeah, that's what I tell people. If you know somebody that's loving Jesus the way you want to love Jesus, ask if you can hang out with them. Just hang around. It's not a teach me what you know. It's not that. It's get into their life. Don't stalk them. See if they'll let you. But when I travel, to hang out with people in the non-seminared moments. It's just hanging out for meals, and people see the way you relax and engage people. And I mean, that's what people need to see more than they need to hear another audio presentation of a teaching, because it really is a way you live your life, and it's not a matter of I'm waking up with certain principles in mind and trying to fulfill them today. And I do think that's a little different journey. How do we really help people get this journey? Because times past, I used to teach people the disciplines. I'd put them on a different treadmill.
You know, Saturday night's got to be, you know, Bible mining night. Let's go find what we're going to teach. And I mean, I know so many people.
Really? They didn't start on Wednesday or Thursday? Really? Not an hour of preparation for every minute on Sunday morning? Oh, my gosh. Saturday night. What can I say?
Well, no, but I mean, I think, unfortunately, that's the way, because of the pressure to perform.
Yeah.
I think they end up going to the book to extract what things can I wow them with.
Oh, yeah.
And so what you're not, I think, unfortunately, that's the dynamic. If we didn't have that sense of, you know, you think of the gladiator, are you not entertained? It's kind of like, well, yeah, do that again. I love when you do that. I think that's the sad reality that we have, is some of the way we gather, it really is for a sense of entertainment.
On both sides. A group that wants to be entertained.
And a guy that wants to be the entertainer.
People feel the pressure to entertain, to be successful.
And I think because of that, yeah. Some of what we get is we're not getting the dynamics of relationship, because I just end up going like, there's nothing wrong with entertainment. I like entertainment. I think it's great. I think there's a lot of entertaining things. But that's different than the life of Jesus.
Yeah.
And so if that's what I want to get, then the only way I'm going to get that is to kind of get with him.
Yep.
And there is no shortcut for that. I mean, I think that's the thing that, you know, if I want that, I'm going to have to find him wherever that is. And I'm going to have to go on the journey. And the way I learn to find him is by looking.
Yeah.
It's like, well, tell me how to find him. No, look.
Yeah.
Ask, seek, knock. And keep doing that.
Yeah, and hopefully you can find some people who will encourage that process. I think in some environments, like this person that wrote me from the school, Bible school thing they're in, if you're around people who discourage that process because they find questions threatening or they find you not conforming threatening.
Yeah, that's not helpful.
It's going to be very difficult.
Yeah. It's
almost better to get away from that.
Wrong wall, wrong ladder.
Yeah, two months, get your whatever so that you can have that for whatever purpose. But in the long run, find some people, even if it's online people, even if it's just people that, you know, you find in some form that encourage a greater relational journey instead of fitting into the expectations that's have for you. That'll help you do it.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
That might be the right ladder.
I started.
That might be the right wall.
I started 4 days ago preparing for this.
Oh, did you? Oh, wow. Very good.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.